Let us remain in meditation, feeling within the heart that there is a presence. It is a loving presence, a presence of peace, of joy, of love. These are all calling cards for the presence of God. Accept God in whatever way He manifests and expresses Himself through you in this moment. Look for and feel that vibration of God. Let it be a living and real presence for you. And allow it to expand. Expand out to fill out your entire being. Fill out to expand this entire room and this home, this city. All this area and the entire world. In your mind's eye, see yourself expanding out until this entire solar system feels as if it is part and parcel of your being. With that divine presence permeating all space, all places, every particle is shining with that radiant presence. And then see your expansion continue until this galaxying like a spinning wheel is also part of your being, not far out beyond you, but a part of you in that divine presence. And all the suns, all the planets, all the beings are all part of you. And there is no place that is held separate and apart from you. And then you can continue to expand out until this entire universe and even further until you see many island universes all spinning from the one divine source. And that when God, who is larger than all of these creations, looks upon them, He smiles. And the most miraculous thing is that God is equally present in the smallest of particles, as well as He is encompassing vast universes. For Him, there is no difference. For all equally imbued with the spirit of the divine life. And feel your mind encompassing that. And know that God is right within your heart. As equally and great as He is in any other part of creation. And you may feel yourself smiling with the smile of God at the recognition of this tremendous truth. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
Be with us today
in our divine adoration,
and awaken Thy love
to be forever enshrined upon my heart. May it be so.
May it be so.
Now and always.
Now and always.
From the book Songs of Kabir, translated by Rabindranath Tagore. O servant, where dost thou seek me? Lo, I am beside thee. I am neither in the temple nor in mosque. I am neither in Kaaba or in Kailash. Neither am I in rites and ceremonies, nor in yoga and renunciation. If thou art a true seeker, thou shalt at once see me. Thou shalt meet me in a moment of time. Kabir says, O Sadhu, God is the breath of all breath. Kabir was always emphasizing that God is as close as the closest, the breath behind your own breath, the thought behind your own thought, the feeling behind your own emotion, that we always imagine in a human sense that God is somewhere distant. But this is an illusion, and He wants us to break that illusion. From Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, the supreme science of knowing God, verse 1 through 2, the exalted Lord said to Arjuna, I gave this imperishable yoga to Vivasat, the sun god. Vivasat passed it on knowledge to Manu, the Hindu lawgiver. Manu told it to Ikshvaku, founder of the solar dynasty of the Kshatriyas. Handed down in this way, in orderly succession, the Raja Rishi, the royal rishis, knew it. But, O scorcher of foes, Arjuna, by the long passage of time, this yoga was lost sight of on earth. Master's commentary. Spirit, cosmic consciousness, here symbolized as Krishna, gave the indestructible Raja Yoga science, the technique of uniting soul and spirit, to the ancient Illuminato Vivasat, the deity of the sun, symbolic of God's omnipresent light, or creative cosmic energy, which is manifested also in man as the microcosmic sun or light of spiritual eye, the epitome of all life and consciousness in the incarnate being. Master does a wonderful thing here. He draws upon the inspiration and the wisdom that was given to him from Lari Mahasya and Swami Sri Yukteswarji, as well as his own personal insights into the inner meanings of these sayings. It is easy to get caught up, either in our own lives or through reading scriptures, that the outer symbols have no deeper meaning. To really utilize the truth and the transformative quality of these words is to pierce the outer meaning into the inner meaning. And here we come to realize that you could think of Vivasat as the sun god, and to somebody reading it from a casual perspective, they would think that somebody is worshiping the sun. But this would be a very surface kind of level of understanding. To really understand the deeper meaning means to go deep inside, to make the mind inward. And when you do, we are taught to meditate upon the ajna. And when we meditate deeply upon the ajna, we come there to see a tremendous light, a light that is more blazing than the sun. But it doesn't hurt your eyes and it doesn't do any damage to you as if you were looking at the sun without any aids or any protection. This ajna, the light that's in the ajna, illuminates consciousness. And therefore, Krishna, as absolute, total, divine spirit, manifests through the ajna, the kutastha chaitanya, as this illumination, as this awakening. I remember when I was going through variety of experiences as God was putting me through many things. And at one point, I was going to sleep at night, and I turned off the light, and I laid my head down on the pillow, and I closed my eyes. And there is such a light in the room that I thought that I had accidentally left the light on. And so I opened my eyes to turn off the light, and there was no light on. It was total pitch blackness. So I closed my eyes again, and the entire room seemed to be illuminated once again with that light. I opened my eyes. No light was there. And so I turned my vision and my gaze more inward, and that light grew and grew and grew. It's a tremendous experience. When you have the reality of these teachings, they're no longer just words on a page, even words that you might agree with, but they're still just words. They're just concepts that we may accept, but we have not yet experienced. And then once having experienced in them, then the truth of it resonates throughout your being. You know that this is the truth. It's one of the purposes of scriptures. Scriptures are intended to lift our consciousness up, to speed up our vibration, to quicken our path to illumination. Because they tell us the truth, and by attuning our minds to the truth, we quicken our pace. We can jump over some obstacles that otherwise, if we were having to reinvent the wheel all the time, we would have to go through a long time in order to realize that same truth. But then once having experienced the truth, the scriptures do double duty. They are a confirmation to us of some inward experience that we have had. And when we read the pages, that seems to leap off the pages, the truth of it, because we have experienced it, and now we know, we have confirmation through these words that what we are experiencing is true. So this is the inner meaning of Vivasat, is to have this kind of light awakened within us. Vivasat imparted the sacred yoga to the great exponent of Dharma, Manu, symbolizing Manas, the mind, the instrument from which sentient consciousness derives. Now, Manu, the lawgiver, comes in two ways. There's the original inspiration in which we know what is true, what is right, what is good, what is of high report. We were watching a movie last night for some entertainment. My Girl Jane is an older movie with Cary Grant. And it was interesting because it was a comedy and there was a lot of clever dialogue in it. But every single message that it conveyed was negative. It was all about the greed of man. It was all about lies and getting ahead by telling lies. And that ultimately, the heroine, who was supposed heroine, turned away from a good man towards this man who represented evil. And that was the moral of the story, I guess. This movie was made in 1940, so it's an interesting study that this kind of message was being sent at that time, a time that we oftentimes associate with having good messages. And so while it was an entertaining, it was like having a nice drink that tastes sweet and good coming down, but it's filled with poison. It begins to emanate out from that. We have to be careful what we put into our minds, because our minds are very powerful. The subconscious mind is very powerful. And when we allow things to come into the mind that poisons the mind, that takes it off into a certain direction, that awakens certain samsaric seeds, those deeds from the past that may not be alive right now, but fan them a little bit with some oxygen and with some heat, and suddenly they burst into flames. And so we have to be careful what we ingest into our being. Now, we're surrounded by information society that gives us so much about so many things. And this is wonderful in many ways. You can look up on the internet many things that you're interested in and find the information at your fingertips. But of course, it just depends on where you allow your mouse to do the wandering. And if you allow it to go into some other areas, it's not good. It's filled with lies and deceit and all the things that are of the baser nature. And so Manu is the discrimination that comes, the understanding of what is good, what is right, what is healthful. And in obverse, those things that are unhealthy, those things that are wrong, those things that lead us down the wrong path. Now, this comes to us through laws that are given to us, the Ten Commandments, the laws of Manu, the laws of Moses. He's the lawgiver within Judaism. And while it's important when we're operating from a human standpoint to understand and to imbibe some of these laws in order to teach ourselves how to lead a good and virtuous life, Dharma is something to be awakened within us. As we purify the mind, we come into an intuitive understanding more and more of what it is that is right for us. And therefore, we can say, as Mother said, when she had paid the price to do so, that she had gone beyond the law, because she would no longer needed to observe the details of the law, because her mind had been purified already and she understood the inner spirit of the law. Just as when Jesus was walking through the cornfields and they had been fasting, and he gave permission to his disciples to go ahead and eat. Well, it was the Sabbath and this was not allowed by the Judaic law, and he was found fault with. And as he rightly pointed out, there is no fault because he was not going according just to his own human whims. He was going according to how God was directing him. And that in that case, God's will is superior to man's law, even if it is reflective of spiritual law. It becomes alive. Now, this is a dangerous teaching in a way, because it's so tempting and so easy for the human ego to take off with its own ideas of what it wants, what it thinks is right. I once was working with a young man. He was taking pills. He was smoking marijuana every day. He was drinking. And one time when he showed up for an appointment with me, he had been drinking while he was driving. Not only that, but he was on these various pills, prescription pills and other pills that he had been getting off the street. And he says, it's all right. He says, I'm not drunk. If I were drunk, that would be a problem. He says, I just had this beer along the way. There is no sense of proportion for him. His compass was so far off base that he had no sense of what was good or what was right. And he'd say, my one thing that I can do is that I'm aware. He was aware. He was aware of what he was doing, but he had no clear sense of his dharma. He had no clear sense of what was healthy or good for him. And while he, on one hand, would deplore his lifestyle, he would also uphold it, make excuses for it, find reasons why it should continue and why he was unique to this world. And this is the way that the mind can get confused. And it begins to justify everything that it wants to do. And if it's challenged, it'll blow out of the room. It won't last. Because that one is so fragile in their understanding. And they don't want to face themselves. If they had to look in the mirror, it would drive them crazy. Because they would see there only a host of contradictions. So these things are very important, because if we go against these laws, if we go against this inner knowingness, or if we've imbibed the laws from the law because we have not yet incorporated into ourselves, and we go against that, we pay the price for that. And this individual said, the doctor has estimated that I'll be dead by the time that I'm 30. He says, I don't even tell him everything that I do. I think I'll be dead by the time I'm 25. And yet, the condition continued. So these are important things. Manu then bestowed it upon the founder of the solar dynasty, the Kshatriyas, the Ikshvaku, symbolic of the intuitive astral eye, the life and consciousness in man. In this orderly succession, this yoga was then bequeathed to the royal sages, symbolizing the descent of life and consciousness into the senses, giving man sensory perception and interaction with the material world. You see what Master has done here? He's taken his, what apparently is a historical concept, and he's put it right inside of you. The royal sages in you are those inspired thoughts, are those inspired perceptions, is that knowledge of divine consciousness that is within you. These are the royal sages, and these are the descendants that have come down into our own being. Thereafter, when the cycles of the world entered the Dark Ages, knowledge of this divine science deteriorated and was lost, symbolically, throughout many incarnations, the senses are engrossed in and identified with matter, and man thus loses the knowledge and ability of reuniting his soul with spirit. Now, we know from Sri Yukteswar's teachings that we, on this planet, in this sun, are in a cyclical kind of work wherein the Earth goes through various cycles from the Satya Yuga, or the Golden Age, into the Treta Yuga, which is the Magnetic Age, which represents the mind. And then into the Dwapara Yuga, which is the electrical age, representing the astral body. And then the Kali Yuga, in which represents the material world or the body only. And so we can make an assessment of where we stand in terms of what age are we living in. Now, in the outer sense, the world goes through these various stages as a whole. And individuals can always rise above those worldly stages. But inwardly, they happen as well. If you are in the Kali Yuga, then you are primarily involved with the body and the things that involve the body. If you are always thinking of this body and its relationship to the world, it produces vanity. You begin to see out through the eyes the things of this world, and you see your own participation in it, and either you feel better than or worse than the people around you. This is a constant comparison that goes on, and it's at the very heart of fear and shame that exists that divide us from God. And so in the Kali Yuga, we're primarily focused upon this world, the world as seen through the senses, and this body consciousness. And we're not aware of anything more than that. As we begin to grow into the Dwapara Yuga, we begin to understand that there are finer energies and consciousness in this world. Perhaps we have some intuitive experience, and through that intuition, we see that knowledge can be passed on not just through language, but through intuitional perception and thought. We can perhaps see the auras of other people, the energy fields that are around them. Now, this is an interesting phase because when you begin to see the energy field around another person, you begin to understand what Sri Yukteswar said about the astral worlds when Yoganandaji asked his master whether all people in the astral worlds are beautiful or not. And Sri Yukteswar said, well, beauty is not seen the same in the astral worlds as it is here in the material worlds in general. Beauty is seen as the aura around the individual, the energy, the consciousness that that individual is in. And somebody may have a beautiful face, but the aura is extremely sick. Another individual may not be outwardly beautiful, but they are radiant. One of the comments that Mother made about Mother Teresa of Calcutta was that she was physically not a beautiful woman. Her features were not beautiful, and her skin looked like it had deep tracks dug into it. But she said that the light that she radiated was magnificent. Mother was seeing both the astral and the spiritual body of this great God woman. And she recognized in her great beauty. And so when you look out through this world and you see individuals, some may have an outwardly beautiful face, but inwardly something's wrong. There's darkness, there are addictions, there are problems that fill that person. They're not reflective of that same beauty in their aura. Another individual you will look at, and you can see in the astral through any one of the senses. So you can see through feeling, you can see through hearing, or you can see through sight, or even through smell. Sometimes I remember there's an individual that had mental illness. And I recognize this in many people that had mental illnesses. And sometimes it was not a physical smell that came from them, but there is something that smelled off. There's something that smelled acrid in them. Sometimes you get around evil people and you will feel, you know, there's the sense that the devil comes with sulfur. And so you get this sulfuric kind of smell that comes to you, even though it's not something you perceive on a physical level. They're not exuding it as a physical specimen. And so you understand where true beauty comes from and where somebody is off, where somebody is not exhibiting that. You can oftentimes, as I look at people, I see what kind of energy field is surrounding them. And for some, there is light, there is a purity, there's a goodness, there's a love that exudes from them. And still others have many negative qualities with them. So you can't fool somebody who has attuned themselves to the inner light, to the inner knowledge in that way. We all stand naked from that standpoint before God. And the kind of habits that we have, what we habitually think upon, you see some people with nervous habits. They have cultivated and have made themselves nervous wrecks sometimes. And their nervous system, as seen through the astral eyes, are jumpy. They're all over the place. There's no settlement. There's no center to them. It's all energy. And it's evacuating itself in every possible conceivable way. One time I was sitting with somebody and we sat together with Mother. And Mother looked at this individual and she said, you know, it's painful for me to sit here with you. And the person was apologetic, but their habits were coming through their energy field, and Mother felt it. And while it wasn't easy for them to hear, it was important, obviously, or Mother would not have said things. Because oftentimes, I know that Mother, and I know that myself, we perceive things, but we don't say anything about them. Because it's not up to me to hold that person on the head of a pin and measure every little thing about them. If God prompts me to say something, then I will. But generally, I see God within every individual. This is when you go beyond the astral, and then you go into the causal, the Treta Yuga. And in the Treta Yuga, your mind becomes more refined. This is the causal realm. And there you see things from a pure intelligence. You see the design of this universe. You see the design behind the astral and the physical. And you marvel at it. It lifts your mind up and it expands you, and you get true insight into the inner workings that go behind the energy of a person, the electricity in them, as is done in the Dwapara Yuga. It's a more subtle realm, and it's more difficult to talk about. There's a time that stands out to me when I had my first perception into the causal realm. I was walking along a path out in the woods, and suddenly the path and the trees and all nature around me transformed themselves, and they all became thought ideas. There's nothing substantially physical about them. They weren't even energetically, or there wasn't the same sense of heightened color as there is through energy perception or feeling the energy of them. They were pure causal expressions, as had come out of spirit, and it was indescribably beautiful and subtle. Magnificent, really. And so when you perceive the world through this, you see the originating idea, the original idea. I've had it in my mind that the house that God provided for us to inhabit at this time, that there is some original architectural idea of perfection for that home. Now, through previous owners, and it just was never completed in many ways. But the idea is to bring it into that original beauty, to express the beauty that was intended for it from the beginning. Now, you might say that nothing in this physical world can ever absolutely reflect the perfection of a pure idea as it originally came from spirit. But we can seek to harmonize and perfect to the best of our ability, and to bring it all into concert and harmony with that beautiful idea that God expressed. And that is the causal, that is the Treta Yuga within you. And then as you continue to grow in spiritual consciousness, you enter into the Satya Yuga. Now, the Satya Yuga is the Golden Age. And in the Golden Age, you see and recognize the divine aspect within everything that exists, both within yourself and outside of yourself. Everything has come from divine origins, manifested as a pure, perfect idea, been quickened and gone out from that as astral vibration, electrical vibration, life force vibration, and finally manifested as a material being. This is what it means when it says that you are made in the image and likeness of God. The image is this threefold creation of causal, astral, and physical, the Treta, the Dwapara, and the Kali that exhibits out from you. And the spirit is that pure spirit of God, light, beauty, without being fettered by any form, any limitation at all. If you can consider the most beautiful and intimate experience you have ever had in God consciousness, and then in your mind let that expand out into infinite reaches, without limit, without any containment at all. Now, this is threatening to the human ego. It's why we don't allow ourselves to enter into the deeper states of consciousness. Many times in meditation, you may find yourself, I certainly did, where you are dropping down to a deeper level, and then suddenly you'll pop right back up to the surface, and you'll be anxious. You'll just want to get up and get off your meditation blanket and go and do something. You're like a deep sea diver that's gone down to a certain level and suddenly got panicked at how deep you are. Now, it all happens perhaps not even in the conscious mind, but in the subconscious mind. And suddenly you pop back up and you want to do something. You want to escape. Now, there's nothing to be afraid of, really. But you have to be willing to go through that anxiousness, that fear, that resistance, and allow yourself to go deeper and deeper and deeper. All of us must take time to go into longer and deeper meditations. Just to skim the surface is not sufficient. It's not a matter of just putting in the time and going longer, but it's a matter of putting in the time and going deeper. Going deeper, letting yourself go down. You can feel, and I imagine even in this moment, if you take an inventory of yourself, you can feel where you start to get uncomfortable at going any deeper, at letting go, at surrendering your sense of control, your sense of what is known, and where you pop right back out of a deeper meditation experience. Do not be discouraged by this. This is the nature of the path. This happens for everybody. But the difference between those who make it and those who don't are those who are willing to challenge and continue on when things don't go easily and smoothly in that way. But if you do, you will dive deeper and deeper and deeper until you come into the Satya Yuga. Now, in the Satya Yuga, the mind has been completely purified. And you perceive divinity everywhere within and without. You feel the bliss of God spontaneously manifesting within you. You have that interior knowledge of Manu resonating within you so that you clearly distinguish between what is uplifting and taking you towards God and those things that are oppositional. You feel the light of Ikshvaku within you, and you are deeply absorbed into it. That light goes out through every part and particle of your being. There is no closed door. There is no darkened place. You have exposed everything. You know, it's a silly idea to think that we can hide from God, but it isn't true. We think there are things that we're ashamed of. We think there are things that we've done in the past that we don't want anyone to know about. And so in our vanity, we try to hide them from God. But this is not possible, of course. God knows it already. And if it weren't for the grace of that perfection of God within us, none of us would be able to be lifted up into that presence. None of us. We have all done things wrong along the way. And if you think that your crimes or your sins are so unique to you that God couldn't forgive them, then that is true vanity. When we look back over the history of mankind, there have been some terrible deeds, and yet everything comes back to God. Everything is reabsorbed back into God's great being. Now, God is unaffected by these crimes, by these sins. It is like a pure diamond within us that never, it may get covered over with mud and caked around with various filth. But the moment fresh waters come in, it washes away through all the filth, and it reveals that gleaming diamond that has never been disturbed by anything that we have ever done or said. This is not excuse making for doing the wrong thing and continuing to do so. We pay a heavy price for that. But what it means is that God is ever existent within you, ever pure, ever present. And that anything inside of you that does not just simply let go of the filth and allow that diamond to shine is ego. And nothing but ego. So don't worry about the things that you've done in the past. Just simply let it go. And put your whole attention upon that infinite divine life within you. Let it purify you. Let it wash you clean. Let it put you through every experience that is necessary in order to purify your mind. It's not easy, but it's no harder, and it's actually much easier than going on in darkness and in ignorance and in separation. That is the great penalty. That is hell on earth. And we're all living in it to some extent, so it's time to let it go. So we go through these yugas, we go through these stages within us, and we can, at any time, take a little temperature check. How am I doing? Am I consumed with the world in Kali Yuga? Am I feeling the subtler energies and purity of Dwapara? Am I going into the more refined of the Treta and seeing there the importance of thought, and I'm accountable for every thought, and that every thought needs to be streaming from the divine life and light? Am I living in that pure divine life that God has given me and through which everything has been created? And I know I have that universal vision. Now, there may be times when you're lifted up into the higher yugas, but then you descend back down. This is the ascension and descension. But through that, you get clearer and clearer in your mind where real happiness comes from. And you see with greater perfection that God alone brings you joy and happiness. I have been having tremendous experiences through this past week, wonderful experiences that God has been putting me through, some of them difficult for the body, no doubt. But they're wonderful. Everything that God does is wonderful, whether it is pleasing to the physical self or not. But more and more through this week, I've just felt myself feeling that this body, this being, whatever it is that I call the I, this mine, this me, is an empty glove. And that God is filling this empty glove. But if God does not fill it, it's just simply empty. The saying that Jesus said, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. That truth has rang so abundantly clear through me. And I feel it through every particle of my being. I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. It is a beautiful, it is a wonderful truth. And for you to become an empty glove like that, an empty instrument, an empty flute by which Krishna may play his beautiful divine song through you. And that song can only be played when Krishna blows through you and finds you completely empty, and that he might operate the keys perfectly without any resistance on your part. Then it is bliss for the player and the played. The instrument finds no greater joy than to be an instrument to that master musician and craftsman operating through you. feel such great love of God in my heart and for all of you. For God is love and love is God. Let us all be bathed in those healing waves of divine love, sweeping over us and sweeping away all darkness, all separation, and become that living instrument, that empty glove through which God might operate in this world. You'll chant with me, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, 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 Om 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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet
and
surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection
surging through every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Bow to the light within you.